Welcome back to the Charlotte Angel Connection, the Charlotte area podcast linking entrepreneurs, investors, and the broader Charlotte community. As you know, our goal here is to interview the individuals who are building, shaping, and influencing entrepreneurship in the Charlotte region so you can stay invested in Charlotte's growth. Today, we are very fortunate to have had Eileen Stevens, who is the co-founder of Tavia. Tavia is a unique product that's launching here in early 2018. It is a buy one, give one product model, much like Tom's. And it is in the feminine products category. So the concept is have females buy feminine products, and for every subscriber they have, a free product is provided to a girl in a third world country. And as you'll learn, they're starting out over in Africa. A fantastic concept. It's a product-based company, right? So we haven't really had a product-based company on here. So in today's interview, we go through a lot of those challenges. We talk a little bit about how they identified the area where they first start their give back program. We talk about some of the hurdles of having a product-based company. We talk about hurdles of going over to Africa. We talk about the benefits of having a co-founder and how long is it taking to come to concept. And it's just a really nice give and take back and forth conversation with Eileen, really walking us through the first 18 to 24 months of getting this thing up off the ground. And it's a neat process right now too, because they literally launched this week, or the first week of January 2018. So we get to talk to her as she launches, or even prior to launching, which will allow us to circle back through in a couple months or a couple years, hopefully both, and re-engage the conversation and find out, how did the launch go? What went wrong? What were the lessons learned and things like that, kind of in mid-flow. So anyways, really fun conversation today with Eileen. I think it sets up for, you know, hopefully some additional podcast out there in the future where we can go through some of these things. But anyways, hopefully you enjoyed today's show, and certainly look forward to letting you in on next week as well. So enjoy today's episode of the Charlotte Angel Connection. So thanks so much for joining us today, Eileen. We're certainly excited to hear about your story and Tavia as well. So if you don't mind, let's go ahead and get started. And as we get started, since it's a new company, can you tell us a little bit about Tavia?
Sure. So Tavia is a company. We're really on a mission to keep girls everywhere in school for as long as they want to be. In the developing world, period stigma and lack of access to suitable products are major barriers to a girl's education. So we are on a mission to keep girls in school.
That's awesome. So it's a big goal. You're in Charlotte, North Carolina. How did you come up with it? Where did the vision come from?
My daughter, who was at college at Wake Forest at the time, handed me a book called Half the Sky. And that's a Chinese proverb for how women hold up half the sky. In there, it talked about all kinds of issues that women around the world have. And in there, it described this issue that the major reason girls were dropping out of school was because of a lack of access to products for their period. And I just thought there must be a solution to this. So then I saw an advertisement for Dollar Shave Club and thought, that's it. Create a subscription service for women to get whatever products they're already using, but do a give back model like Tom's Shoes and to keep girls in school.
So a book and an advertisement prompted the idea. What your background, you're not a serial entrepreneur, so to speak. This isn't you don't live out in the valley. So you haven't started, 10 different startups, and this is a startup. That's what you just described is a daunting task. How did you take your first step?
Well, it is, I think it's just sheer bravery and jumping in. First step really was to talk to other people, other women, and see if they actually understood this was a problem in the world. And the answer is 99% did not know it was a problem. But what I found is once people understood it was a problem, they wanted to make a difference. So from there, it was finding partners who were like-minded, wanted to make a difference in the world to help put the company together. So the first one was Skip Amos, who is very passionate about this project as well. So he became my business partner. And then we found investors along the way.
So talk about Skip. How did y'all meet?
So Skip is actually a neighbor of mine.
Yeah.
And I told him about the idea and he's like, oh, that's, you know, interesting. And then I showed him a YouTube video about a girl named Beatrice who lived in Uganda. And it clearly delineated this issue of if the girls were during their periods were missing 5 to 7 days of school and they get behind and it's, you know, they're taught, school there is taught with a chalkboard and chalk. So it's not like you have handouts of paper or computers you're going to catch back up. So if I'm out of school 25% of the time, I fall behind. And so I just drop out. So from there, he was in.
What's Skip's background? How do y'all work together as a team?
Skip's background is a lot in big box retail, putting together programs to release products to the market. My background is in organizational development and in marketing.
So then y'all work quite nicely as a team in the process of launching an ambitious product into the marketplace.
Yes. And we've also had people come alongside of us that are passionate about the project as well that have lent their expertise.
Absolutely. So talk about that a little bit. I mean, again, you're in Mooresville, we're in Charlotte, not known as a big startup community, certainly not known as a big hub for funding a lot of ventures, but you've been able to raise money along the way in different shapes and forms to get the company to where it is today, partly because you're resourceful and partly because you push. But how did you find the capital along the way to get you to here?
So I found one of the investors through some of my other contacts, through my organizational development work. And Skip actually found the other two investors, one he's known for a very long time, who then introduced him to the third investor. So between the three of them, we were able to put together the company.
So I was talking at a podcast interview recently with a gentleman, Alan Fitzpatrick, and Alan is, I'll probably get myself in trouble, but I'll say Alan is in his late 40s, early 50s. And Alan, if you're listening, you're younger than that, I apologize. But, you know, you're in that kind of, you know, Alan was talking about it. You're in that prototypical true startup age. I mean, what we think of with startups is the, you know, the young 22-year-old, but in reality, a lot of startups are found by people that have been in corporate America for a number of years and are stepping out and have a concept and want to launch it. Is the process scary at this point in time, Eileen, or is it just exciting or confusing, or what's it like to go start a new company?
Well, it is very exciting. It is also sometimes a little bit scary and overwhelming. But it really came down to, William, I just tried to put myself in these girls' shoes or in the moms and dads of these young girls. And if I had to look at my daughter or daughters and say, I'm sorry, I can't help you, and they drop out of school, you know, in the developing world, school is typically not free. So the parents are paying and sometimes having to choose which kids get to go to school or not. So if a girl drops out at 12 or 13 or 14 years old, her future trajectory gets very difficult because she doesn't have the education to go into banking or accounting or business or become a doctor. And so now I'm really relegated to jobs that don't earn me a lot of money. And in parts of the developing world, the dowry is still a concept. And so often they're married off quite young.
The end recipient here is what makes the passion or gives the passion to continue to push through and knock down doors.
Exactly.
I hear you. So talk about the end recipient a little bit, Eileen. Who is the developing world is a big world, right? So how are y'all going to deliver and who are you first targeting and how have you settled on them? Talk a little bit about the recipients of the as the company starts to grow, where's the first set going?
Well, you know, the giving part of Tavia is really why we started the company. So we really approach it with the greatest of care. We are starting in Uganda because we've got a strong partner on the ground. So as we expand out, there's two important pieces of this puzzle. One, that we've got strong partners on the ground to help us get into the schools. So our concept is once we visit a school and we give the girls their products, we come back every year so that they stay in school. So we kind of adopt a school. So, and it's not where you can just ship the products to the schools. If you do that, the girls will never get them. So it really needs to be a hand-to-hand distribution. In addition to that, as we expand, we will be employing women to make whatever is culturally appropriate in that area. So we're actually going to also be employing women, teaching them some skills so that they can send their kids to school. So the statistics that we've read in the developing world is that women put 90% of their income back into their families and the community, and men put somewhere between 30 and 40%. So if you want to take a community out of poverty, educating a girl is a good investment.
How'd you choose the first school?
There's an organization in Charlotte called Fashion and Compassion that does some amazing work with women in Uganda. And so their local employee knows some headmasters, and that's how we chose the first three schools. So we've actually been to three schools, handed out about 550 kits for the girls, and really got a great education on what it is that they need and exactly how important this really is.
It's fantastic. So go back. We kind of touched base on it earlier, but you know, you found enthusiastic partners all along the way. And I think part of it is, to your point, the underlying mission probably just attracts partners, but you found some fantastic partners. Can you talk a little bit about the partners that you found and then how you stumbled across them? I mean, just your trip to Uganda itself was a fantastic trip, and some of the things that happened along the way are great stories.
So it's really one person introducing us to another person, introducing us to another person. What's really been amazing about this project, William, is that people really understand it and get it, and people really want to make a difference. So as soon as somebody hears about the project, they will say, oh, you should meet so-and-so. And so that's really how we met Michelle Dudley at Fashion and Compassion, who then introduced us to Jane Olaki, who is the employee in Kampala, Uganda, who helped us arrange that entire first trip, get in, meet the girls, and make sure that, you know, we take the giving back part of this very seriously. We want to make sure we are not a toxic charity, but that we're giving a hand up, not a handout.
That definitely makes sense. So what does 2018 look like for you, for the company? What are the goals for 2018? How are you going to measure whether or not next year is successful for the company?
So the website and the big kickoff will go live in January. Once we start that, our goal is to add about 2,000 customers a month or more, and that way we can make sure to fund the give back. And as we continue to go to other parts of the world, again, we will be employing local women to make whatever is culturally appropriate in that area.
So 2,000 a month. How many subscribers does it take to fund a school? And I know that's going to vary depending on different things, but on a rough basis, is it 10,000 subscribers per school, or how do the numbers work out at this point in time?
It's really a one yearly subscriber funds one girl's yearly product.
Okay.
So it really is truly a buy one, give one. So if there's 200 girls in the school, then it's 200 subscribers.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes a heck of a lot of sense. So I believe the concept came about somewhere around 18 to 24 months ago. Is that kind of roughly when you started the concept, Eileen?
So I probably had the idea three and a half years ago. But yes, just under 2 years ago is when we really started putting the program together. And the what's been amazing is that every vendor that we've utilized has really understood what we were about and has done their very best to give us their best pricing so that every savings that we have, we're able to pass along and help more girls.
If you could go back to day one, maybe not 3.5 years ago, but to 2 years ago, same concept, you buy one, give one, concept comes to mind, but you have additional knowledge today about how the process is going to work and everything that's going to develop. What do you do differently? In other words, if today was day one and it's not day, you know, or month 20, if today was day one, what do you do differently?
I think it's trust the process. In the end, whenever we've needed something, someone has introduced us to someone who's been able to meet that need. So it's kind of the stress and worry has gone along of how are we going to manage this or how are we going to make this happen. Something has always dropped in place, and that's really been what's an amazing part of this project.
Do you feel like the timing has worked? Do you feel like, gosh, I wish I could have run faster, or well, we needed more time to do X or do Y, or gosh knows, why does the world only spin at 24 hours a day? Or has the timing stuff worked out the way you wanted it to?
I thought it would go faster, but working with lots of entrepreneurs over the years, you know, they always say it takes longer and costs more money than you think it's going to.
Yeah.
Just because you don't know what hurdle's going to get thrown in your way when you first start. But when that hurdle gets thrown in your way, you just got to figure out a way around it, under it, or over it.
Does having a co-founder help in that for you, Eileen? And I know different people have different takes on co-founders, but has having Skip there along the way helped you with those hurdles as they've come?
Absolutely. You know, that old adage, you know, two minds are better than one is really true because we bring different things to the table. And so he's got some thoughts that I didn't have and vice versa, or contacts or processes of doing things. So really between the two of us is how it's really come together. I think it's also important to have a male involved in this project because it while it is a, quote, girls and women's issue, to have a strong man involved who's equally as passionate also sends a very strong message of this just is not a woman's issue. It's a human issue. You know, really, talent is universal, but opportunity is not.
Yeah. No, that's really fantastic point. And to kind of stay there, you know, you and Skip both went over to Uganda. Was there a little bit of hesitation about bringing a male into that environment? And how did it ultimately end up working out?
It's a great question. So I was not nervous to bring a male into the environment. And I will tell you, the people were amazing. What worked really well is I would go into the classroom and talk to the girls and answer questions about their bodies and what we were giving them and why it's important to stay in school. While I was doing that, Skip was in the courtyard or wherever it was talking to the boys about why it's important that these girls stay in school. And if the girl has an accident with her period, that it's not dirty or gross, it's simply biology, and that they need to come alongside these girls and support them so they will stay in school.
Yeah. No, it seems like it worked really well. Culturally over there, is it a big change to have girls stay in longer? Is that going to be a challenge as things develop? Or, I mean, I guess enough of them have continued to go along. But was there any pushback along the way from quote unquote stakeholders, or was it mostly supportive?
You know, William, I actually wondered that, like, if they're used to a certain percentage of girls dropping out of school, what's going to happen to the size of the schools, et cetera, if these girls don't drop out? And what I found is that they were all very supportive. And one of the male teachers said to me, he said, Eileen, you think you did a small thing today, but you did a very big thing. He said, as a teacher, it's very difficult to have these talented girls that then drop out of school. And he said, we help them the best that we can, but, you know, teachers don't make a lot of money either. So there's only so much that they can do to help the girls. And I asked the girls that I met, which was about 550, I said, what are you doing right now to manage your periods? And I was actually, what I discovered is, they don't really talk about it. Their moms don't tell them a whole lot, or their aunts don't tell them a whole lot. So they had a lot of questions about what was normal or what wasn't normal. But what they told me they were using was the top couple of answers were banana fibers and feathers and leaves. And they all wanted to know if the pads that we were giving them was going to keep them from getting the sores between their legs.
Wow. You took a big risk in going over there, right? I mean, it kind of along the way that every time, everything you've done is a big risk. I mean, stakeholders over there could have said, we don't want this and we're not going to be supportive of it. And your buy one, get one concept that you'd been working on over the course of the last 14 to 16 months, you know, kind of falls through. Did you look at it like that as you were going over there, or did that thought not even cross your mind?
It crossed my mind a little bit, but I guess ignorance is bliss. So I didn't let it, we didn't let it stop us. What we really discovered that no matter where you are around the world, teachers go into teaching because they want to make a difference. So they were very supportive. The administration of the schools, they were also equally as supportive and were very gracious. I mean, I'll tell you, William, I have never seen gratitude like that in my life. They could not believe somebody showed up and cared.
Yeah. So circle back around to and kind of staying on that whole constant potential for things not to build right. What were some of the initial kind of hurdles that you had to clear? What was the first, you had to get people to buy into it, and then you had to get a co-founder. You're making a feminine product. I mean, you're trying to ship it. You're building a website. You're trying to give one overseas. What were some of those hurdles as they popped up that were, had any one of them gone wrong, the company never makes it to launch, right?
So I think the hardest piece of the puzzle, believe it or not, was naming the company.
Yeah.
Because we wanted a URL that wasn't exorbitantly long and that was easy to remember. And the company is actually loosely named after one of the girls that we met. Her name is Octavia. And she was amazing, and she gets true leadership. She gets making a difference. She's very generous. She was the number one student in her school where we met her in Kampala. And so we ended up shortening that name and calling it Tavia. So that was probably the hardest. Also getting distributorships with the manufacturers of the feminine products, because what the Americans are going to buy are the products they're already using. So what we're doing is we're creating a customizable kit. So women can go in and they can say, I want 5 Super Plus tampons and 4 regular tampons, whatever brands they're already using. And they also then get to select how often they want the product shipped. And it comes in a discreet box, but they know every time they make that purchase, they're keeping a girl in school.
How hard is that to build on the back end, Eileen? And the Dollar Shave Club seems pretty simple, right? Razor blades come in, and gosh knows if they don't come in next month, I'll just reuse my ones from last month, and it's not that big of a deal. But in the feminine products category, that's not necessarily the case, right? So from the technology perspective, were there a lot of hurdles that y'all had to clear?
You know, there was some. Fortunately for us, we're not the first e-commerce site to ever be built. So there's a lot of expertise out there that we were able to rely on to be able to create a customizable shopping cart for women.
Yeah.
And I think the key is that, you know, all we're doing is shifting where you're buying your products from. And with that simple shift, you're getting to keep a girl in school. So it truly is a buy one, give one.
No, absolutely. We're running up on time on our first podcast, but kind of a lead in that will be the carryover to the next podcast. Can you talk a little bit about your go-to-market strategy? Who's your initial target market for the company?
The millennials are our target market.
How did you come up with the millennials as your target market, and then kind of expand on that? What's your expectation, or how are you going to reach them?
So we selected the millennials as our initial target market because they do buy for a cause. They're very socially aware generation. Others are as well, but that's our initial target market. And it's all going to be done via social media. And we're also going to have ambassadors in colleges as well as women ambassadors. And we will train them and give them a presentation that they can give wherever it is that they're active, whether it be a civics club, a religious organization, a sorority at school, et cetera.
Gotcha. What's your, do you have an initial ambassador school that you're going to, that you've targeted, or will those details come out in January as you launch the product?
The details will come out in January, but we're actually working on doing a live company launch at one of the schools in North Carolina, which will be pretty exciting.
Oh, cool. So that's exciting. I mean, I think that sets us up to talk a little bit more about your market, how big the company goes, what's ahead for it beyond 2018, and a bunch of other things as we head into part two of our podcast. So thanks again for coming on the show. I mean, gosh knows, this is an exciting company. I've had the fortunate aspect of at least seeing parts of it develop over the course of the last 18 months. So to see it here so close and to be able to talk to you about it on the podcast is fantastic as well. So thanks, Eileen.
We certainly appreciate it. Thank you, William.